Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson. Welcome to My Seven Wonders. In ancient times, hanging gardens, great pyramids, and other superstructures were celebrated as wonders of the world. And like Days of the Week and Deadly Sins, there were always seven of them. But what are the seven wonders you would put on your personal list? That's the question I ask my guest in this podcast. And the guest I'm asking today is a young, award-winning comedian from London you might have come across on TV or radio or on stage here in Edinburgh. He's appearing in his fifth solo show here at The Fringe. His show is called Imposter, and he's called Bilal Zafar. So please welcome Bilal Zafar.
Thank you very much.
So, Bilal, I think...
All right.
Yeah. I think you might have tried to spoil the surprise of your arrival. You think you...
With my flyers.
You fly the audience, so... So you've got got an eye to commerce. I always like that about The Fringe. You could have different political views, but an awful lot of people, it's agitating on behalf of the all sorts of social justice and everything. But it's a very brutal sort of capitalist concern, isn't it?
You get
to sell your seats.
Come to my show. Good.
So, Bilal, tell me first of all, tell us where your show is on. We might as well get that established.
350 Underbelly Bristow Square. It's called Frisian, the room. It's the biggest I've ever done. It's 120, which is a lot for me.
Yeah.
So, it's massive.
Yes.
It's going very nice so far. I think it's my best show.
Okay.
I'll say very quickly what it's about to make sure they come.
Yeah. Make sure they're informed. It doesn't know.
Yeah. I used to live in a shared house in London. I had a housemate who started to believe he was a secret agent, and he tried to get me arrested several times in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And it's got some very funny bits in it. Don't worry.
So this is a real life story that you're telling. So you're clearly a talented comedian, but maybe not so good at choosing your flatmate.
But
you can't tell, can you, necessarily, when you're organising flatmates? The limit.
You can't, no. Landlord, he didn't check any proof of references or incomes. Are perfect for a comedian, right? But of course, anyone could move in, and they did.
Now, your Wikipedia entry has a strange note. And it may or may not be accurate. The one about me is certainly not. But it says you deal in Islamophobia, racism, and cakes. And I know that's true, though, because I remember interviewing you on Loose Ends a few years ago.
Yeah.
And you did a sort of a... How would you describe it? You had you invented a cake shop.
I'll explain. What happened was, this was my first show in 2016. My Twitter handle, X, whatever it's called now, is Zaffa Cakes, because my surname's Zaffa. I like Jaffa Cakes, right? Zaffa Cakes. And my brother made a little joke on Twitter that Zaffa Cakes is a Muslim-only cake shop. He refuses to serve non-Muslims. People got very upset. And it went for like a month or something, and it just gave me loads of material. And that was my first show,
So you were accused of being racist because you weren't going to sell to me. And so people were agitating against you.
People were appalled. And it wouldn't even make sense as a business idea, would it?
No.
It's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But these
How would you check people out anyway? Would they have to be able to... quote from the Quran or something before you got your
I guess that's it. I didn't even get that far. The thing is, these people don't really think about things. Quite thick people, I think. Is that fair? You know,
but it's good for publicity. People are getting a reaction.
It's fun. Listen, winding people up online is very fun.
So have you stuck to just doing the comedy and not being a marketing expert?
No.
Up with a scandal?
I don't want to have a cake shop. It seems like a lot of work. Right? Comedy's a lot easier, I think.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we have to get on with your wonders, because sometimes it's a bit of a rush to get all seven in the available time, because people have got other shows to go to and things like that. There's probably a show coming in after this. So your first wonder is supporting a team.
Yes.
Now, I'm assuming, but I've nothing to go on. Do you mean a football team or...
any sports team, I think. I mean, for me personally, it's Arsenal Football Club.
Okay. Oh, there we are. Yeah. Well, that's good. So I support Arsenal in England. So we'll just have to put up with any Spurs fans that have to be here at the moment. So, you're not saying it's supporting Arsenal. It's any
team. So, well, it's Arsenal, and in cricket, it's Pakistan. That's who my dad supports. You know, it's a massive part of my life, and I've only realized recently how weird it is, like how tribal it is. I'm like a villain if like Tottenham lose. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, yes. You know, it's so bizarre. Like even I was thinking like last season, Arsenal scored, Odegaard scored against Tottenham.
Yes.
And I'm running around my living room screaming, right? Yeah. I've upset my lovely wife.
Yes.
You know, and my little cat, Calico. She's tiny. She's hidden behind the sofa. And I'm like quite a nice, normal, quiet guy usually. And it's like, what is that? Is that good to behave like that every weekend? I don't know. I think it's fascinating.
Well, it's probably not good. And I've made enough suggestions to reference to me being old, but I often think, why does it matter to me?
I'm in the years
and I'm worried about what 11 highly paid professional sportsmen who are doing it for their living. Mm-hmm. Why does it matter to me? But it does, doesn't it?
And it's mad. You're sharing that moment of joy or disappointment with like thousands of people around the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I do that thing where I look at moments in my life and it's like, what football thing was going on then?
Yes.
Like I remember like Arsenal scoring an FA Cup winner, and then like a minute later I had to go up on stage in Soho Theatre and I'm all like celebrating on stage, you know. Loads of stuff like that throughout my life. Oh, before I got married, literally, this was quite recently, a couple of minutes before the ceremony started, Arsenal scored a last minute winner against Aston Villa. What a great day.
Yeah.
Right? The photographer's got a picture of me celebrating in my suit and everything. Yeah.
Well, I know that we'll move on from this because, I mean, people who are interested in football go, yeah, I'm celebrating. People who are not interested in football or sport are going, oh my God, how's football? But my memory goes back a long way. And there's a book called Fever Pitch, and there was a film made of it because Arsenal won the top division in England in 1989. And I was filming something that day, during the day. And it was quite a rarity because the match was on television live. It was the last match of the season and it came down to the result in that game. I'm sure you know, but I'm explaining. So I was doing a bit of filming for a friend or some sort of thing. And it was definitely going to finish by 5 o'clock. And as the way of these things you do for friends, it didn't finish until midnight in South London. So nobody was to tell me what the result was. And there was a guy sort of in the business was driving me home to North London, to Islington, where I lived. And I said, oh, great, I can go in. I've got it. I can watch it on tape. No, and I can just... And I said to him, you know, is it worth my while staying up to watch it? He played his part beautifully. He said, well, yeah, it's up to you. And so I couldn't work out from him. Unfortunately, as we got to the Angel Islington, which is at a junction of the road, there were naked men dancing in the street. Policemen were there. Naked policemen dancing in the street. I got an idea how the result was. And if I can go on to, there was I can't go on forever because not that many victories at Arsenal, but they won the, what was then known as the European Cup Winners' Cup. And I was busy that evening. I was making a speech at quite a big event. And I thought, right, I'm going to go home. I'm going to arrive home like a criminal going to court. I'm going to have a blanket over my head. I'm not going to find out. I'm going to be watch this one. Anyway, the Toastmaster introducing me. So now we have a speech from Mr. Clive. And before he starts, can I just say he'll be in a good mood when he gets in because Arsenal have won with an Alan Smith goal, the European Cup winners' cup. No, the one thing you had to do was to not tell me that. Anyway, so you're just easing off Arsenal for a moment. You got a family attachment to Pakistan. Yeah. Again, I can mirror that because I have a family attachment to Scotland. Mm-hmm. So I support Scotland in most things, including football, which hasn't given me that much joy over the year, to be honest. But it's been reasonably good recently. But Pakistan, there's been sort of sometimes they're you know, there's lots of matches. Sometimes,
match fixing.
There's been cancellations. It's the political situation. Is that? But sometimes a very good team.
Amazing. Sometimes. Yeah. I mean, literally, when I used to play like as a teenager for my school and stuff, I wanted to be a fast bowler because we had the best, most exciting. And a lot of them are like from quite poor backgrounds.
Yes.
And it's similar to like these Brazilian footballers who like had nothing, and then but they're so talented.
Yes.
They become these superstars.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a massive. Yeah. As a family thing, it's quite nice. We all kind of gather around and watch. Yeah. It, you know, yeah.
And did you ever feel any pressure from, you know, that thing Norman Tebbit said years and years ago? It's a test.
I'll put it this way. I support Pakistan in cricket, but if England, if the England cricket team are playing India, I'm the biggest England fan you've ever seen, right?
Yeah. And what about England, Australia? Do you
support? Oh, no, I kind of England are like a second team. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. But I have to, even though I obviously share all your enthusiasm in this way, but it's bad for you, though, isn't it, to be so obsessed? But would it not be better to be a neutral and go along and just appreciate
the... No, I don't think you get it. The thing is about sport as well is that the rivalry aspect of it is such a big part. Like, I've got a friend who's an Arsenal fan, and I don't know, Tottenham or Man U or whoever lost one day, and I said, oh, have you seen this? And he was like, oh, I don't really care about other teams. I was like, what? That's like a massive part of it.
Yes.
Enjoying the misery of the rivals. And you don't get that if you're not a fan of sport, right?
Yes, and it's funny. You can have a close friend and you want them to have a really bad day.
Absolutely.
Just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
All right, so supporting a team, there are positive sides, but even the negative sides you're enjoying. Okay, so let's go on to your next wonder. These are intriguing wonders. They're very broadly expressed. Sometimes people are very specific, like a specific edition of an iPad. That would have been... Oh, iPod, sorry. Oh, do you see what I mean? Yeah, so... okay. So I could say, I heard you say getting old. I don't know if you said I was getting old or you're getting old, but I think it maybe applied to both of us. Never mind. So your next one is nerves/anxiety.
Yeah, which is a weird thing to say, but like for me, so like I'm not trained in acting or anything like that, but I became a comedian when I was 21 just because I wanted to get into comedy, really. And that thing, it's like, I used to not even go to drama lessons at school because I was so scared. And I am an actor now, which is ridiculous. Like, I've been in films and TV and stuff. And I was so terrified of doing it. And then the first time I kind of forced myself to do it, it's weird. It's like, I think you're not sure when you're first having these feelings of anxiety, you're not sure if it's like, oh, I have stage fright, I can never do it. Or like, no, you can, you can push through it. And that is part of it. And I feel like whenever I go on stage, like the nerves kind of help you through it.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like a weird ritual of feeling the worst you could ever feel.
Yeah.
Then you step on stage and it's like, I'm here. It's a weird thing, but I think it's really important and it makes you appreciate going on stage a lot more. I think the anxiety makes you realize it's important to you. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, this matters.
Yes.
I think it's very important.
And does it ever get any better or any less anxious for you? If you've done a few, I think you've done three or four shows here in Edinburgh.
It's my fifth.
So you've done four. This is your fifth. Mm. And then you tour around the country
and other
places. Yeah. But having done one, two, three, do you now think, well, I know roughly how to do it. It's not going to go completely disastrously.
A little bit, but you still get terrified.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. I mean, when I first started, literally, it was like my legs were like jelly. Like, I couldn't stand up. Like, it's like, why am I even doing this? Yes. It was ridiculous. And now it's like, I know I can do it at least. So you still get nervous if it's like a big, you get these stupid like audition gigs for TV stuff you have to do and all of that. You get a bit more nervous then. But I'm definitely like doing a show every day at the Fringe is different because you just step out and do it. You get used to it. But it's kind of up and down.
Well, I'm suggesting it might get better, but on the other hand, it doesn't get better necessarily, because if you do a good show, you think, oh, I've cracked it. Now there's a new audience. And you don't want the new audience to go away thinking you're not very good. You want them to have as good an experience as last night's audience.
And that's the great thing about doing stand-up, is that audiences are always different.
Yeah.
And it's mad. You do exactly the same thing the next night and they're just not interested.
Yeah. This is a warning to you today. You keep interested. But let's just go back to you. So you said you got going into when you were 21. So at school... Yeah. You weren't going to drama lessons. Were you going to science lessons? Were you going to be a doctor? Were you going to be not interested in academic
Very
things?
Bad at school. In fact, the thing that made me realize I wanted to get into comedy stuff is a thing that a lot of people look down on. It was media studies, right? Yeah. Which everyone like hates. Because we had to do a thing where we did a short film when I was like 17. And I wrote the script and me and my friends made this thing. We put so much work into it. And I was like, oh my, this is the first, it was like the first time I'd been happy at school, I think, genuinely. Yeah. I hated all of that. I hated university as well, to be honest.
So what did you do at university? What subject did you do?
Media writing and production.
Okay.
Yeah. But then I stopped doing any work because I started stand-up. So, yeah. Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot riding on every performance to keep going.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I love it now. Mm. I'm much happier now. People that say school were the best days of your life, like, what is wrong with those people?
I mean, either way, it's a depressing thing to say to somebody at school, isn't it? You say, oh, these are the best days of your life. Either it means, oh, but I'm having a miserable time. Yeah. Or even if they're having a good time, oh, it's never been as good as this again.
It's going to end.
You should say, yeah, it's good, but you can make it even better as you get older. And
yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so that was you at school, not particularly attentive. But has it been useful? Any bits of information you got from media studies? Can you work out how to, I don't know, sell a program or to know how they should be filming it or
a little bit. Script writing and things like that we learned has helped a bit. But it's just like getting out and actually making stuff is the thing, you know.
So when you create a show, do you sit down and write it down, or do you just work it through and do a performance to, you know, a bit of it to a small crowd as a tryout? Or how do you do
bullet
it?
Bullet points. It's all bullet points. Yeah. Because it's all kind of storytelling. And I read in Stuart Lee's book years ago when I was just starting that he said he writes out every single word. He's very particular. And I thought, do I have to do that? But that's just not, everyone works differently.
Yes.
What I love about stand-up as well is that there's no set way of doing things. You just figure out your way. And yeah, there's no, whereas at school, it's like, you got to do everything like this. And I was never very good at anything. And then now you do whatever you want.
But it sounds like this show you're doing this year, it's a story recounting, or certainly based on something that happened in your life, something a bit weird. But to next year's show, are you now hoping for something weird to happen in the course of the year? So you're looking out for crazier flatmates to move in with or to be...
I'm always getting myself into problems.
Yeah.
It's just going to keep happening, I think.
Yes.
So I'll be fine. You know, yeah. I'm not worried about material.
It's a bit like those singers who sing about the big breakups they have in their life.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, that was good for that album. But I can sing the next one about falling in love. But we've got to fall out again. Yeah. And I hope he treats me really badly.
Yeah.
Because otherwise...
I've heard of comedians doing quite cynical things to put shows together.
All right.
Okay. I wouldn't do that.
No. Okay. No. All right. So that's nerves and anxiety. But you said it might be a bit like stage fright, but you've never felt, oh, I can't go. Because some people, ones who are not comedians, they sometimes have in their life an awful moment and they have to make a speech as a best man speech or a speech at their own wedding or it could be a funeral, anything like that. Mm. And if it's something you don't like doing, it is kind of the worst thing.
I totally understand. Yeah. I used to absolutely hate that when I was younger as well.
Yeah.
But I tell them, people ask me for advice on like best man speeches and stuff. And I'm like, that is the easiest gig you can do in the world. Why are you even pretending? Like, that's not hard. Everyone's on your side.
Yeah.
Just don't like, you know, be rude about the families and stuff. And you'll be fine, right?
That's not comforting to somebody who's anxious about making a best man speech, saying it's the easiest
gig. Okay, you're right.
Yeah. You say it's easy for you because you're used to it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you could write, they want you to write them a speech. That's what they, okay. All right. So that's your nerves and anxiety. Strangely, you're making it a wonder of the world, but.
Well, for anyone, I think that stuff is,
okay. So now your next thing is social media.
Mm.
So I don't know which range of ones you use or would advocate.
I just think it's all incredible. I know that they cause a lot of problems and, I don't know, manipulating elections allegedly. I don't know. But like maybe they've done all sorts of things like that. But like for me, my show we were talking about, the cakes thing, all happened through Twitter. It wouldn't have been possible without that. I actually met my wife on Twitter.
Oh, right.
Through
was she sending you abusive remarks about your act? And you thought, that's the woman for me.
Yeah.
That's who I need at home.
That's
to keep
my type.
On.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
There was a thing on, I don't know how many of you are familiar with Twitter and stuff, but like...
I think we're all familiar with Twitter, aren't we?
I mean, if you use it much. Okay. But there was a thing called Fleets on Twitter, right? Which was a terrible... It was like Instagram stories. It doesn't really matter. But Fleets, there were this thing where you could... I guess the best way to explain it is that you could get into direct contact with people on Twitter a lot easier. It's a bit of a weird thing. And that's how me and my wife started chatting. And we just were talking about how bad Fleets was, because it was awful. It didn't really work, right?
All right.
And then that was the start of something. Right. Yeah.
That's an odd way to choose a wife or a husband, really, to
slag off a thing.
Mutually moaning.
But I think that's the best way.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But it's fun. These sort of social media generally, they're mainly have been around for maybe only 20 years. And that may seem a long time to you, but for if you're a bit older, I've often struck. I once had a. It's not quite social media, but I had a radio program about Wikipedia, and I had to. You know, I was getting the date, and it said which started in the year. I think it's 2000. I said, no, it can't be. It's been around much longer than that. I've been using Wikipedia, but no, that was right. And you use something called Twitch. Is that right?
Twitch.
I don't.
Does a single person here know what Twitch is?
Yes, there's a single person there.
I'll explain.
Don't condescend to us. Just explain. We can't keep up with everything.
I don't mean to. I have a problem. My tone comes out wrong. I actually think you're all great. So Twitch is a thing. It's a bit like YouTube, but it's live. And people stream themselves playing video games. Now, I can't explain to you why people want to watch people play video games. Okay, that's just a thing now, right? But the thing I do on there is like a comedy thing where I play an old football game, but I wear the top half of a suit and I am the manager of the club. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's a weird, surreal thing. I started that in lockdown and it just massively took off and I managed to build this big online audience. And because the season paused as well, because of the pandemic and they had to stop the season, my team, my fictional team in this game became a lot of people's team they supported. Crazy time, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what sort of manager are you?
English, old style, no nonsense.
Yeah.
Let them know you're there.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Blame the refs for everything.
Yeah.
Conspiracies. I think everyone's against us. Everyone's against us. All of that.
Yeah. And what's the name of the team that you're managing?
The game is called Pro Evolution Soccer 5 from 2005. The team is called PES United. They exist in the game and they have all these fake players in. And I've given them all personalities. We have meetings and stuff. And everyone that watches the stream live. So there's like a chat bar. They can talk and we interact. And they are all automatically assistant managers of the club.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of assistant managers, but it's this weird ongoing drama. It's weird. It's the strangest thing I've ever done, but people really connect with it.
But you're doing a sort of comedy twist on it, but you're saying that before that, there are people just watching other people playing a video game. Why don't they just play the video game themselves? Why do they want to watch somebody else doing it?
I don't know. It's weird. Well, they're either watching someone who's brilliant at it, so fair enough. I think a lot of the time they like the personality of the person and they just enjoy. I would describe Twitch, not what I do, not the football thing, that's a bit different, but I describe Twitch as it's a little bit like listening to the radio. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of people just have it on.
Yes.
And listen to it. But it is hard to explain. I know that. And it is weird, but this is the future. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Glad to know.
I mean, it's
odd. But social media generally, you've mentioned Twitter, or it's now supposed to be called X. There's a rival one called Threads, but there's also WhatsApp a lot of people would use. We call that social media as well. It's a way of communicating.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what about the downside? Because for older people, you think, oh, there's a lot of abuse going on. You think, well, I wouldn't bother going on it. But if you're a young person and you're being bullied at school, you can go home. You can be bullied online as well. So it's an odd procedure.
It's weird. It has its positives and negatives, definitely. It's probably better to not be on there for your mental health generally. Like I wouldn't worry if you're not on there, but for comedians especially, it's you got to be promoting yourself and all of that, and it is excellent for that. Mm.
Well, I don't know if he's doing his show today, but a friend of mine, David Baddiel, has been doing a show up here, just a few shows. And he created a whole show. One of his stand-up acts was just taking the abuse he gets online and responding to it. And he gets a lot of done in his life, book writing and performing and all sorts of things. But he's still got time to sit at home being abused online and dishing it back as well. And then turning it into a... So could you do that? Do you get enough other than
I did that as a cake shop, didn't I? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think you copied me, Baddiel.
Well, maybe.
Not really.
But could you just generally, do you get a lot of abuse when you do a show? Or
A little bit. Nothing crazy. I think I'm not famous enough. I don't talk about politics that much and stuff, you know. But it happens, yeah. It's, the thing is, social media, it's very addictive. That's the thing about it as well. Yeah. It's very, yeah.
I'm a bit worried about your wonders so far because there's the destructive thing of supporting a team, inducing hatred. Your nerves and anxiety are a wonder, but there's a downside of that. And we got onto social media. Yeah. And you're conceding it's probably a bad thing sometimes.
Have I picked all the worst things in the world?
Well, not necessarily, but there's plenty of negatives in them.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go on. Oh, here's something. Well, is this good or bad? I don't know. Number four is television.
Yeah.
So what?
Is that bad?
No. Well, I think it used to be bad. I think people used to be critical of it. When it first came on, children always been told not to watch too much television. You'll get square eyes. You'll be much better reading novels, which was when novels had come along. There was, you shouldn't be reading nonsense stories that people were. And so some people have a cutoff point. They say, I'm not. So there used to be, I listen to the radio but not watch television. Now, television has looked like a good homely thing that people used to watch in great numbers. But it's kind of, I didn't say it's dying a death or it's just changing to something a bit different. So which aspects of television would you go for?
Well, I'm thinking about when I was growing up, basically all of my comedy influences came from television because I never, my parents, we never went to like the theatre or anything like that. That wasn't really what we did. Mm. So much. And when I was little, so I have got two older brothers and they were teenagers when I was little, bit of an age gap. Mm. And so when I was really young, I was seeing stuff like Alan Partridge, The Day to Day, Brass Eye, all of this stuff, like legendary stuff, which I absolutely loved when I was like too young for it.
Yes.
And I think that's what completely made me want to go into comedy. And like now, even now, like something like Twitch, I love so much because like TV was for me, you can watch it for free pretty much, right? Whereas, so when I started doing Twitch, I realized I had a whole new audience of people that aren't the ones that can afford to come to the, like seeing me at the Fringe or on tour or Soho Theatre or whatever, it's expensive. Mm. And especially if you've got kids and you need a babysitter and all of that, not everyone can do that. But then with Twitch, it's completely different.
Yeah.
I love that about TV as well. You know what I mean? You can be anyone and watch it. It doesn't feel like there's a,
Well, I'll just stick up for comedy shows and shows that are the Fringe. I know there's a price to be paid, but it's not the same as going to like a theatre to see a big musical or a big play where, especially in London, is a huge amount of money you have to pay. I know this because I go to see plays quite a lot because I'm interviewing people and I get given a free ticket. But when I have to pay for myself and maybe, you know, wife and children, I think, what's going on here? I don't want to buy the theatre. I just want to... Compared to those prices, it's not too bad. I'll just stick up there. But television, if you go back even before the shows you're talking about when you were young, it used to be the case that somebody, I don't know, if you think of comedians like, it was Morecambe and Wise, the big comedians, they could get half the population of the country watching their shows. Their Christmas specials by the end were getting 20 million, 25 million viewers. Extraordinary numbers.
Yeah.
Now, but that's not really possible anymore because most of us have now got 100 or 500 or 5,000 channels to pick from. You've got your Netflix things. And do you have a slight nostalgia for that?
I do, I mean, not even comedy related, just like when things on TV used to be such a big event, was so cool, and that doesn't happen anymore. Like even I used to watch like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with my family, right? Remember when Judith Keppel won that million for the first? Of course you do, right?
Yes.
You don't get that kind of thing anymore. Even like my little nephew and niece, they don't watch TV. They just watch everything on demand.
Yeah, they're just watching you on Twitch playing a video game.
So I wish.
Yes.
They watch Minecraft streamers. Do you even know what that is? I don't. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, the whole,
And people watch, to mention another one, YouTube, where people are watching 2 or 3 minutes of something and that's enough. They don't want to sit and watch half hour or three.
It's hard. It's hard. Like trying to be a comedian now, like putting your stuff out there. Everyone's obsessed with very short things. And I like very long form stuff. Like if I'm doing like a 20 minute set in a club, it's like, it's usually like little stories, you know, and then it's like, and now you've got to have things like 30 seconds or whatever, or a minute for TikTok and things. Yeah, it's all changed.
Oh dear. Your age sounding a bit despondent, but maybe it's healthier really, because, you know, idea that half the nation should be watching one set of people, not just comedians, it's a bit of a
it's a bit of an oddity, isn't it? That we've reverted to something slightly more normal. And to get a really big following, there's like that box set thing when everybody gets into a particular series, Succession or something. Yeah. But when you say everybody, it's not the whole nation, really. It's just spoken about a lot. And maybe 5 million or 10 million people will be watching it eventually. But there's never the large figures that...
And even like the way you were talking about football before, you can't avoid Succession spoilers, unfortunately. Yeah. For these big shows, you've got to stay off social media if the last episode's been on or whatever.
Yes.
Because it will get spoiled. Yeah. It will be trending on Twitter, X or whatever, you know.
And of course, in the old days, there was a discipline to things. So if you wanted to watch... How far back can I go with that? The Foresight Saga. Do you remember that? You had to watch it on a Sunday night or something, and then you had to wait till the next Sunday night to see the next episode. And if you missed it, you might not even have a way of taping it. So you'd never see an episode until it was repeated, well, now on yesterday TV or something. So anyway, so television, it is a wonder of the world, because it can still bring you, you know, a football match played on the other side of the world, or somebody landing on the moon, or a big show together, and lots and lots of other bits of entertainment, acting and so forth. But maybe you and your generation have missed the golden age of television, and you have to comfort yourself with all these other things as well.
Yeah, we're in a weird transitional period.
A transitional period.
Where it's like between, because the fact is that a lot of comedians are getting on TV now, and it isn't what it was. You know, like, you don't become this huge star if you go on Have I Got News For You or whatever. Yeah. It's just, it's not the same, but you can become massive if you do this little funny character online.
Yeah.
It's just, it's all changing, yeah.
Well, I mean, Boris Johnson went on Have I Got News For You, and he became Prime Minister, so it still had that amount of power a few years ago, at any rate. But you mentioned you've done some acting now. Is that on television you're talking about?
Yeah, I just did a thing in a sitcom which isn't on yet, where I play a vicar in an episode. It's pretty good, isn't it?
How did you get that role?
Just auditioned, did the best. They said you were the best, and I said thank you.
Yes.
I'm in my claim to fame one is I'm in a film called Last Christmas, which has got Emma Thompson in it, Emilia Clarke.
Oh yeah.
And I got to hang out with Emma Thompson for a couple of days.
Oh wow. Well, she's
I thought they'd like that more, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, she's a fine actress.
She's great, and she's lovely in real life. Yeah.
Yes.
That's pretty good. And hopefully I'll get more. I do enjoy acting.
Yeah.
I'm very feel lucky that I get those opportunities.
So Last Christmas, that's quite a sentimental kind of film, wasn't it? You weren't supposed to guess the ending, because otherwise...
No, but everyone did, because there was a trailer that spoiled the ending.
Yeah.
And then there was even a Guardian article that said, is this the twist of this film? Like, come on. Yes, it was the twist.
Yes, it was a yeah.
Yeah, don't
lot of,
say
lot
it.
Of, no, no, I know, but a lot of eggs in one particular basket. But you got to meet Emma Thompson and Emilia Clarke, so that's not a bad achievement for you.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
All right, so let's go on to your next wonder, which is crowds. Again, a very general topic.
Yeah. Well, it was lockdown.
I seem to be taking you by surprise with your wonders.
Seven is a lot of wonders, you know. Over lockdown, it was that thing of when, you know, like, obviously, for me, live comedy was my only income. Like, that was the main thing I did. And then it went overnight. Like, I had all these things planned. I was supposed to come to the Edinburgh Fringe in 2020. It's just all gone No idea when it's coming back. And that feeling of a crowd laughing was like gone, and you didn't know when it was coming back at all. There were Zoom gigs. I bet some of you watch Zoom gigs. That was a depressing time. It's literally like an anxiety dream, just talking to your webcam and you're doing stand-up. Mm. Come on.
I didn't see the point of that. I thought that was...
It was nice. Like a lot of nice, like, you know, established comedians set this up for us, and they some of them paid us and stuff, which was nice. But yeah, it was a bit bleak. And then even football, that when they were showing football or sporting events with no crowds at all, and then they faked the crowd noise.
Yeah.
And it was slightly off.
Yeah.
And it's like they're supposed, like he's just messed up there. There should be a way, and there's nothing.
No.
That's not what I want.
There were no obscene chants played in. You had to do those for yourself at home.
Yeah, I had to sit there doing it. And like, you know, when even any random game or sporting event, there's like a last minute goal or something, and you just want to see the away fans going mad or whatever. It's an empty. Yes. And they've put in this fake crowd noise, and it was really bleak. And then as soon as it was all back, I could go back to football and back to live comedy properly and stuff. Like, you realize how much you appreciate that. I didn't appreciate it before, really.
So, well, I get the point that you were missing the crowd, because that's the joy of being, you get that buzz and endorphin response, but it's also income. So how did you survive?
It was Twitch.
Yes.
Twitch became a football manager, and it was like a miracle, like, because I really had nothing going on. I was really in a point in my career where it was like, oh, basically for me, right, the way this industry is, right? I was only ever getting approached to do some stuff around being Muslim or being Asian, and it wasn't good stuff. It was crap. Okay, it was stuff that would make you cringe, very bad ideas. And I said, I don't want to do this stuff. And I was just stuck in this thing, and I thought, I'm going to have to become one of these awful guys I can't stand.
So what, the sort of thing you were going to be?
All sorts of things, man, all sorts. Like one of them was, should I name stuff? It was all stuff like one of them was going to be a dating type show where I have to find a Muslim wife, and they wanted my mum in the show, approving and disapproving of these girls. And it's like, they don't even know my mum, right? They're probably imagining she's like Ramesh Ranganathan's mum.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I know what they think my mum's like, but my mum has like an English accent.
Yes.
So that's not entertaining for them, is it?
All right.
You know
what
I mean?
So you basically ruled your mum out of a TV career. She might have wanted to put on an entertaining accent.
Yeah. It was all very patronizing, like job offers basically. And it was like, wow, it's weird, because you start comedy. I got the newcomer nomination in 2016, all of that. And you think, wow, so if I'm good at comedy, they'll let me do stuff. But that's not how it is. You get so badly pigeonholed to the point where now, like my new show and stuff, I don't talk about like race or religion stuff at all. Because I don't want to be asked to do that nonsense. Mm. I just want to be like, well, I'm funny. I'm as funny as all these, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean by that, because I like to interview. I'm interviewing people the whole time. And we're a very balanced program on the BBC. There'll be a woman, there'll be somebody of a particular ethnic group. But I like to just interview them about the project, not about how you are the third woman to get the role and something, or the first Asian ever to be appointed. That's fine. That's interesting in itself. But just get on to talk about it. You talk to anybody else about the
role. Yeah, yeah.
But nonetheless, and I don't want to dwell too much. It was a bad time for everybody, obviously in the music business.
I lost track. Sorry, I went off on something.
No, it's good. But to have a whole industry which depends upon there being people coming into, sweaty, crowded. I mean, this is a relatively air conditioned and
lovely.
But rooms in the Edinburgh Fringe, I should think about the worst places for COVID. You go into a hot room, there's everyone breathing, and then you go, sometimes you go outside, it's cold.
And the fact
wet.
That they were still considering doing it, right?
Yes.
Do you know, does anyone know what date they told us that the Edinburgh Fringe was cancelled? April the 1st. Not even joking, seriously. Yeah.
I don't know if it was that first 2020 or 21, there was something going on at the Fringe. I came and somebody did an act in a car park. And I came in from Glasgow where we were doing the show, my show. And I thought, it'll be an indoor car. But it was an outdoor car park. And it wasn't a warm, lovely evening. We were all sitting far apart. And it was, it was well done. The show was well done. But it wasn't a communal experience.
No,
chuckling away with your companion, and then somebody over there maybe not chuckling away. Obviously, somebody, and then further, oh, there's another chuckler.
That's depressing, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. But it was a sort of soldiering on in adversity that, or the people did shows where, like drive-in shows, you could sit in your car and you could hoot your hooter if you thought it was funny. Or maybe hooting was heckling. I don't know. Maybe
I think so. Yeah.
Maybe you washed your windscreen when you thought it was funny. I don't know. But anyway, so that was a tough time. But so crowds. So do you like it? I don't know. You do shows in the centre of London or here?
All over
when
the place.
There are crowds milling around on the on the pavements as well. That makes the feel. Oh, there's something going on here.
It's great. It's honestly, I'm very lucky that I get to. I do sell quite a few tickets at the Fringe, and it's just that feeling when it's a good crowd and it's all energetic. There's nothing better, honestly. Like, yeah. I think yesterday was like my favorite show because they were just, they were just so good, such a good energy.
Yes.
There's nothing like it. Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's very good because this is your day off from your show, but you've volunteered to come along and talk to my. Well, I like to think it's my crowd, so I've provided that for you. And
I like them.
Yes. This is a crowd that you like. Crowds we like. So let's go on to your sixth wonder. Now we're just sucking up the audience. And this is cooking. You like cooking.
Yeah, it was something, again, that I got very into during lockdown because we had so much time. And I got obsessed with, you know, before I was very much a pasta or stir fry kind of guy, like not much effort went in. And then I bought myself a slow cooker.
Yes.
And it's changed everything. And I got like the 20 quid one from Argos. It's not even, you know, and I've got so much use out of it. And I learned over time, I got better and better at making these stews and these like red curries and green curries, all of this Massaman curry, amazing.
Yeah. So you just throw everything into the
pretty
thing?
Pretty much, the beef or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's just.
How slow was a slow
4 hours.
4 hours?
You do four
so
hours
you come
on
in
high.
Of an evening or if people with regular life, you come in at six, you want to eat fairly soon, but you've got to wait 4 hours for a meal. That's a lot. Or have you got to have done it in the morning?
You've got to do it before, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think you're meant to leave the house with it on. Is that bad? That's a fire hazard? Yeah. Don't know. These guys, they
all right. Well, maybe I'm getting down to too much, particularly the slow cooker.
But just that. Yeah. And also, I want to see what reaction this gets. Air fryers.
Ooh.
You got one?
No, I haven't.
Get one.
Now, why are they good? What?
They're absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
The thing is, people think...
You fry it with air rather than oil? I mean...
Everyone thinks that they, because they're called that they fry your food. It's just like a mini oven.
Yes.
But it's incredible.
But why do I want a mini oven? I've got an oven. Why do I want a mini oven just in case?
There's the cost of living crisis, which it saves energy.
Yeah.
But also it just works a lot quicker if you're doing like a smaller thing. You know, it's just stick some potatoes
How many
in
cookers
there.
Have you got? So you've got a slow cooker, an air cooker. You've got your original stove or oven or something. Yeah. Any more? Have you got a...
Four bread toaster.
Yeah. Pizza oven in the garden for when you're having a barbecue.
One day. That's the aim. That's the dream.
All right.
When I'm really famous.
Well, sell me. I mean, it's obviously, plenty of people here have got, I haven't got an air cooker. How does
fryer.
It? Fry. Air fryer. Air pan. What is it? An air loaf. Air what is it? How does it work? You put your stuff in somewhere.
Put the stuff in and turn it on pretty much.
That's not enough detail for me to just.
But that's so great about it.
How to get somewhere? Oh, just straight down, basically. Straight down. You turn left at the church. Well, it used to be a church. Turn where the Tesco was before. It's Morrison's now. I don't know. Go down that way. And nobody's concentrating. But that's not good enough. What does the air do in an air cooker?
Gets really hot.
So it's like a hairdryer.
Yeah, basically. Just use a hairdryer on your food.
I didn't have a hairdryer. I don't really warrant a hairdryer these days. A blowtorch. Is it like a blowtorch?
Sure.
Well, you're kind enough to come on with your wonders, but you're not very good at directing.
I don't think I can explain. Can anyone explain what an air fryer does apart from...
The little shelf and an air gets underneath it. So it's hot air gets underneath it. So that's just like an oven, isn't it? Is it very, very hot?
It's quick.
It's quick. Okay, all right. Well, this is the most educational one of the of these. I'm wondering about my 70-something one of these. I don't think I've necessarily learnt a lot from any of them or been sold anything, but this is what I'm going to go and get an air
fryer.
Yeah, air fryer, air fryer. I've learned the name of it now. An air fryer. Yeah. So you're cooking, and do you cook things from your childhood? Or
Not really. My mum is too good a cook. It's like, don't even try. You know what I mean? Her cooking is absolutely incredible, but I am going to try and learn from her.
Yeah.
And apply some of that, you know. But yeah, I mean...
So your Pakistani heritage, I don't know, I mean, along with... You know, 99% of people in this country go to Indian restaurants a lot, mm-hmm. but mostly I think those are Bangladeshi restaurants, really. Mm-hmm. And then there's obviously lots of different cuisines from north and
but
south.
Pakistani food is similar, but it's better.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where do you stand on alcohol? Is it something you keep away from?
I don't drink. No.
Now, does that make a difference in your experience of the Edinburgh Festival and Fringe?
Oh,
because
I guess
for a lot
so.
Of comedians, most of their time is spent either performing or standing around drinking. So
but
I'm not
going
to give a bad mouth to comedians, but that's...
Just do it, fine. Yeah.
Does that mean you remain fresher than most comedians
do?
Yeah,
I think so. Like, so when I first used to come up, I thought it was the cool thing to do to hang... We have these like industry bars, you know. I thought it'd be cool to hang out with these like male comedians that are a bit cool, that get very drunk at night, and I'm just kind of with them, you know. But then you realize, oh, I don't think these people are happy. And so I don't do that. I just like, I go and watch some shows. I have a nice time. My wife's visiting for a week as well. We've seen loads of good stuff. And then we go back. I might do, sometimes I've been doing little things on Twitch from my room. I've got a little setup. And it's just much nicer. Having rest is actually really nice, you know?
But if you're in a room with a lot of people drinking, do you notice their conversational skills deteriorating?
Absolutely, yeah. But I can always leave. I mean, people can get very boring very quick.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I mean, I used to. The thing is, it's like I've been doing comedy a little while now. And at the start, you don't know who you are. You know, you don't know what you're meant to do. And you think it's cool to hang out in these places. And now it's like, no, I'm not missing anything. And actually, the show is the most important thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, get enough rest. Do your best for the audience.
Yeah.
And that's what matters. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is turning into a public information advisory film. I think that's good. So, but that's so it's cooking. We've covered the cooking and your various ways of doing the cooking. I've got a takeaway from not. I haven't got a takeaway. My takeaway from this is I've got to get myself an air fryer.
Yes,
so
please.
I can fry my air. And we've got to move on. We've got to get within our time. Your last wonder is cats. Oh. Yeah, it's divides the room a bit, I think.
You
but
absolute
I assume this
scum,
is cats.
Some of you, I swear. Yeah. Man. I heard some sighs.
Yeah. Well, it's a slightly divisive thing because sometimes people side with dogs against cats. Some people like both. I know, but...
You don't have to pick a team, you know?
Yeah. We're supporting a team is where we started.
Sorry.
So,
yeah. Okay. Boo, cats.
Yeah.
So have got you all... more boos than Arsenal, that did. Yeah. The cats. For me, it's been like I had a cat from when I was very young called Kitty. And that was because I was little and we took too long to come up with a name for her. We called her Kitty and that stuck. I had her till she was like almost 20 years old, right? And the thing about that is I got her when I was like 9 years old. So she was with me like in my family home. Obviously, I went off to uni and stuff. But I'd see my cat like since from child, you know, primary school, secondary school, sixth form, university, becoming a comedian, having this career. It's like my cat was always there. And she got very ill at the start of lockdown. Sadly, had to be put down. Very sad. And then after about a year, I thought, I need to get my mum a cat. I got her this little calico called Coco.
You have to explain calico.
Calico, sorry. Calico is when they have three colors. It's always usually a female cat that has the three. She's like a little bit brownish, gray, gingery, like it's all, you know, or white, sorry, this little mix. Coco got very horny and went and had five kittens.
Okay.
Right? Before they could get a spayed. Five incredible different kittens. I got to see them. I was there because my mum was worried the day they were being born. And I saw them like
actually
go
being
from,
born.
Well, pretty much actually. Yeah, yeah. Because Coco was very nervous. She wanted my mum to be around, right?
Yeah.
I saw them be these little things that immediately find their mum's milk and then eventually open their eyes and they all get their personalities. It's weird. And then I kept one for me and my wife and she looks a lot like her mum. She's called Mini Coco.
And the other ones, did you drown or did you find other...
Terrible. Why is that getting applause? We were having, I thought this is going to be a lovely ending.
Yeah.
A very wholesome ending.
Not in the air fryer. Stop it. Stop it. It's talking about a kitty cat, not a Kit Kat. That wouldn't go in an air fryer, would it? So you found loving homes for all the other ones, obviously.
There were two ginger boys. They went to my mother-in-law.
Yes.
They live by the seaside now. That is the best present you can give to a mother-in-law. She can never criticize me now.
Yeah.
She's got two cats.
Yeah.
Two brilliant cats.
Sometimes it's grandchildren mother-in-laws like.
But cats.
But a cat is next best thing, I suppose.
And the other two have gone to very loving homes. The thing is, I love these cats very much, but then I can see that you don't really care.
Well, some do. So. But cats often give an impression. We've had cats. I must say I'm more of a dog person, but sometimes gives the impression they're not that bothered. I mean, dogs at least make an effort. They look enthusiastic. They love you. They want to be with you. Cats wander in. So, you know, where's dinner? You know, mm-hmm. Actually, I'm not interested. I'll have some. And then they'll push off. They'll go next door to get better food. They'll scratch you if they feel like it. And you want them to do something. There's no way of training them.
Yeah, but they are funny because they're unpredictable. We all know what a dog's going to do. Come on. Oh, he's doing that thing again he does every day. Wow. Cats, you got no idea. They're absolutely mad.
Yeah.
My cat does love me and my wife, though. She's very sweet, but she's crazy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is it real love from cat? I mean,
I think so, yeah.
Dogs are programmed to love you, so they do it. That's part of their mm-hmm. nature. Whereas there's a special thing when you look at a dog. The looking in your eyes of a dog after a few seconds, you bond with it. I've had this explained. I've been to the dog train. I've got a new dog who's a difficult dog to train.
Mm.
And that's the only thing we get right is that I can
look in its eyes.
Yeah. She's a great furry dog, and I got into trouble with the sort of like social, well, the internet more. So I wanted to get the first, not supposed to be sort of cut, it's supposed to be stripped. So I went on looking for, stripper was the term I used. And I thought, well, that's wrong, that's getting me another wrong. So I changed it to grooming. And then, and then my big mistake was saying dogging. That was the one that went down. But she is a difficult dog. She's lovely. But we have had cats. We had some cats had their kitten in our front area in our London house, and that forced us to have another cat because my wife likes cats. But
yeah.
But you know they can take it or leave you, can't they? And that may be a strength of cats, but because they're not needing to be looked after.
I like
after.
That. I mean, I don't feel like I need the love of a dog like some of you do. You know what I mean?
Well, our dog owning goes back quite a long way. But I was a traditional thing of a dad saying, I don't want to have a dog. I'm not having a dog. They're just a nuisance. And then within one second of getting one and 2 weeks of being in the house, nobody else looks after the dog but me. I do all the walking, all the grooming, in consequence, the dog loves me and I love the dog. So that's, I'm onto my third one like that. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. But this is all right. Okay. But you're not interested in dogs. I'm interested in cats.
I don't mind them.
Yeah.
Cats right, are so, better, but you know.
So okay, we'll go with cats. We've just about got in time. Your seven wonders. Thank you very much for sharing all those with us, Bilal. Now I have to choose the wonder of wonder. The which of your wonders that I think you've made the best case for to make that your wonder of wonders. And you've made a good case for various things. I'm not going to be persuaded by cats at the end there. I like the idea of liking crowds and nervous and anxiety. I'm not that wild on social media. But the one I've learnt most from in this particular case, I'm going to say cooking. So I'll make that your wonder of wonders. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bilal Zafar. I'm off to get an air fryer. So.
If you enjoyed this episode of My Seven Wonders, it would be wonderful if you could rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you found us. Thank you for listening.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.